Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Behind the Racket Pod, the podcast taking you behind the racket with today's top tennis players and biggest issues facing the sport.
Behind the Racket is a community to give fans and players in the world of tennis the opportunity to open up like they have never done before.
Visit BehindTheRacket.com for the latest stories, merch, as well as direct links to all of the latest podcasts. It can also be found on iTunes, Google Play, Pandora, Stitcher, and wherever you find your podcasts. Download the episodes and make sure to leave a review.
And we want you to be a part of the conversation. Find me at NoahRubin33 or Mike at MikeCTennis on all forms of social media. You can also learn more at BehindTheRacket.com or MikeCTennis.com.
Special thanks to my sponsor, New Balance. Visit their latest shoes and styles at NewBalance.com and learn more about their program of giving back at #NBGivesBack.
You can also help support the podcast by visiting patreon.com/behindtheracketpod and receive rewards from our travels around the world. And now.
Hey guys, welcome into the podcast. Mike here. Thanks for being a part of the Behind the Racket podcast. Noah will join us here in just a couple of seconds with our guest this week, Tara Moore. And happy March to all of you. Hopefully some of your family has gotten vaccinated, somebody in your household vaccinated, maybe you're vaccinated. Congratulations. Hopefully you guys are hoping to turn the corner here and we're headed towards something a little bit more positive, not only just in the global life, if you will, but also on the tennis side as well. We have Tara Moore with us here this week. She's 28 years of age, career high for her at 145, currently 219 in the world. She is a Brit, and she has been a part of the ITF's World Tennis Tour player panel over the last several months, since middle of last year. Last week, Tara and I had a little bit of a discussion because there was an infographic that was posted about just a lack of opportunity for players ranked in that 150 to about 250 range, specifically the ITF 60Ks or 80Ks, which are equivalent to men's challengers. So we wanted to bring her on the show this week to talk about that inequality, as well as just a complete lack of opportunity for women's players right now and why that's such a challenge. So Noah joins me, and here is our interview with Tara Moore. Tara, you and I exchanged a tweet or two last week talking about just the lack of opportunity specifically on the women's side. And I that's kind of where we want to go here. But I guess I kind of wanted to start with this, just this idea of what it's been like for you. You and Noah are at similar rankings points in terms of the ATP versus WTA. What's the last year been like for you generally in terms of opportunity and the ability to play and just get out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously the ATP and the WTA ITF circuit have a different kind of, they have different kind of problems. They both have problems. They both need to change. They both need to sort of bring their level up to what it should be now with professional sports. I think the more I've looked into it, because I never looked into the men's side of the game until recently, because I was like, okay, I've obviously never played the men's side. And I don't really have that big of an interest watching tennis. So it's kind of just been recently, like obviously Noah and I had a little bit of history with trying to start like a players kind of union-ish. But I think for me in the women's tennis right now, what the men have done so well is supporting the lower rungs of tennis. So you have like the 15s, the 25s, which, okay, yeah, they're the very bottom of the bottom. And those are kind of like your stepping stones to your challenges, your men's challenges. Whereas women, you don't have that. You have 60s, 80s, and 100s. And I was looking at some stats, and we have less than 20 of those the last year and a half. So that's the kind of problem that we're seeing on the women's side of the game. And also just that no one wants to speak up for it. So I'm sure that if you're top 100 right now, you've at least played one or two ITF tennis tours at some stage in your career. Mm-hmm. And they know there's a problem because I've spoken to top 100 players, top 100 female players, and they know there is a problem, but they're just unwilling to say anything that might help. I guess it might help their like their opponents. That's the only thing that I can kind of go from there.
You know, we're during this pandemic right now. And again, you know, we've worked on a few different things and there's so many different directions you can take it, but what is the next step right now? Like, where do you feel, you know, during this pandemic, everybody's like, well, be careful. And is it stopping? Are we taking a break from tennis? What is the next step and where do we go?
Well, I've heard some rumbling on the men's side of them actually thinking about stopping for a while again, because they're just not happy with the prize money situation, which I can understand. It is drastically dropped since COVID has started again, the pandemic started. But for me, I don't see women doing that. It's not something that a big group of women would do. It's definitely not something the top women would do, which is who we would actually need to do that if it was something that we were going for. I think the problem that I see is that there are so many lower ranked girls, you know, everyone ranked outside 150 right now, they're all unhappy. Like, there's not one player who's happy with the schedule, one person happy with how little we actually have to play, but they're not willing to work together and sort of push out a unified message. So it's sort of like I'm tweeting one thing, two other girls are tweeting a different thing, and it just kind of doesn't mash up. So from my point of view, what I'm trying to do now is speak to a big group of girls, get them interested in obviously and understand what's happening right now. Yeah, because even in a normal time without COVID, we have a problem anyways. It's not just COVID. COVID has just amplified this problem. So I think where a lot of the girls right now are seeing the problem because of COVID, they need to understand that this has been happening for the last 5, 10, 15 years. And we actually need to change the fundamentals of the ITF tour in order to make change.
Yeah, so that's kind of what I wanted to get to, because it was Anna Kay Forever who had that tweet with the graphic, Tara, that just basically it said, you know, it was January through Miami. On the women's side, I think there are 30 events, I believe 30 events at the highest level, 14 25Ks, and only three, what the men would say, are challengers. On the other side for the men, it's 52 at the highest level, 25 are challengers, and then 9 are 25Ks. So there's just that, again, around the 200 ranking, which is where both of you are, that's so difficult to really schedule and figure out. Can you talk about what it's been like in terms of the talent that are at some of the 60Ks that you've seen, Tara, and then as well at the 25Ks and how good those fields are?
I mean, so back a couple of years ago, when I first started playing, when you would play a 25K, you would be kind of looking at 600 being in main draw, and that would be a strong field for a 25K. Now you're looking at 500-600 not getting in even to qualifying of a 25K for women. I mean, if we look at like 2 weeks ago, there was a 25 in Orlando. Anna Samova ended up playing. She's 31 in the world right now. And okay, yeah, she probably just was using it for matches, etc. But how is that allowed? How is that not like something that is just like banned? Because not only they have all these WTAs going on right now, we can't even go into Australia. Even if we wanted to just go sign in and play a WTA, we can't even go into Australia right now. So they have all of these tournaments right now out in Australia. Obviously Anna Samova is a different case, like she had a whole other different thing, but I'm saying for the majority of top players right now, they have so many opportunities. They have pretty much the same amount of opportunities as they did pre-pandemic. So what I'm trying to say is, and what I've suggested 10, 15 times to the ITF and the WTA is put a limit on it. You know, something like if you're top 150, you can't play a 25K. I feel like if you're 150 in the world, why are you playing a 25K? You know, that there's you don't move up in points. They're using it for matches, and women just will play and play and play and play and play until the cows come home.
So wait, you know, on the men's side, there is talk about, you know, CERN stopping from playing with the situation that's going on. You said the women would not do that, you know, with, you know, I completely agree. I mean, we joked about this pre-pandemic, Mike and I, about how we go into challengers, and if you're in qualifying, you're grinding every match out the first round, where you could have used to, you know, look into like the third round and see where I was going to be. So now that the money's basically cut in half, I mean, Miami, I think, is 65% now. Why wouldn't they stop? Is there just no other option right now? Does it make them look weak? I'm curious what the women are thinking in this direction.
Well, no, I think the women outside of the Grand Slams right now would stop. I think they would be like, you know, there is such a big problem right now that we would stop and we would put our foot down and we would strike, etc. But the top 100 girls wouldn't. And that's where the WTA are listening. That's what the WTA, the media, the press, the fans, that's where the interest is. Whereas you guys are very unified. Like if you know, 15, 20 of you are unhappy outside of top 100, the top 100 will be like, okay, let's try and help them. You know, they're my friends. I've known them since juniors, et cetera, et cetera. With women's, it's just like, you're unhappy. I'm happy though. I'm earning money right now, so I don't really care. And it's really sad because they're not hurting. Like, obviously it's great for them. They can earn money and they're earning a living, but it's hurting the future of the sport. And that's what I don't think they understand. And that's one thing that I don't think they see.
What you're part of the ITF player panel right now. What has that discussion been like in terms of how you guys are hoping to help players at the 200 plus rankings points, especially when you do have that idea of an ITF ranking plus a WTA ranking?
I think the only way I can describe it is that the ITF are actually trying. There's not much they can do. Their hands are tied. A lot of the ITF tournaments that are scheduled on the calendar are very much reliant on federation funding and sponsors, because there's not much interest. There's not much fan interest. There's not much sponsorship at that level. You know, just as there isn't as at the ATP either. I mean, there's a lot of betting, but besides that, there's not one guy who you're going to be like, oh yeah, I'm going to follow him and he's just going to play challenges for the next couple of years. Like, you hope they move up. So it's kind of an odd bracket of tournaments. And what I kind of suggested was, especially during the pandemic, why don't the WTA just help out and host a couple like hybrid WTA ITF 60, 80, 100K events? And it would be a great kind of test to see if it could work in the future as well.
I think, you know, our biggest question, and, you know, the one in Orlando was, you know, it came out and you only had one tournament in Orlando. I mean, this is a place that we feel like can hold six tournaments in a row, men and women. And we should have those kind of bubbles, you know, looking even at challengers. And I haven't looked at all the prize money cuts for ITF and WTA, but has to be similar. There's really no money to be had. Like, people are breaking even at best at a lot of these challengers when you're going to one-off tournaments in, you know, what did Mackie just win, Nur Sultan or whatever, and Kazakhstan? You know, it's just, you look at this in Italy and you're going to one-offs and you're not making money. You know, can we come back from this? You know, if we, let's say, hopefully we get past this pandemic, it's the fall, where do we see tennis ending up?
I think this highlights just how broken the sport is, because even before the pandemic, you would have challenges, ITF or men's challenges, just in random places. Mm-hmm. There was no correlation to the calendar. Like ATP and WTA, you kind of see like, oh, you go from Asia to North America to Europe, etc. But with challenges and ITFs, you just kind of go, oh, we'll put one on in Uzbekistan. We'll put one on in, you know, India. We'll put, like, it's, they don't care, because it's just like they're hoping to put on as many tournaments as they possibly can.
Wherever there's money, we'll go.
Right.
Literally.
Yeah. And I think obviously like the women's sides really struggled with Asia shutting down.
Right.
The men, obviously, like they're less reliant on that kind of sponsorship. But for the women, it's a huge part of women's tennis. And I think that one of the things that we keep suggesting is more fluidity on the calendar, having, instead of having one tournament in Orlando, for example, and then having the next week in Arizona and then going back to New York, like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, they should be able to at least go one part of the country across the other, which will help women. I think men too, but women especially, because we don't get our hotels paid for at Challenger level. We have to pay for everything out of pocket. So if we can at least save on some flights, I mean, that would help at least, I think.
Obviously you're familiar with the BTR tour. You've seen that there are all these UTR events now. When it comes to the idea of, as well, there's the ITF ranking, which is a separate ranking. Do you think we're at a point where there might be some validity towards really having a separate, just an entirely separate tour altogether? I don't know if rival is necessarily the right word, but truly like a separate league that maybe can then flow into, say, the ATP and WTA level.
It sounds great, but will the ITF and the WTA and the ATP support it? There's no chance, because right now they have monopolized tennis. You have one tour you aspire to play on, and that's it. It's not like golf or basketball or even soccer. They have like different rungs of different leagues, and you can play in different leagues, you know, based on your ranking, based on your level, etc. But with tennis, it's so focal on Grand Slams, and how would you merge UTRs with points, Grand Slams, etc.? Like it would be great. I think it's a great thought, but I don't know how it could materialize.
So besides, you know, let's take out another tour, for example. What do you do? You know, you're the commissioner of tennis. We added this question a few times, actually a few months ago. We did a, you know, 5-minute interviews with people. You're the commissioner of tennis. Where do you take it right now?
I would minimize the schedule. I think the having tournaments 12 months a year is just not, it's not good for any players, like physically, mentally, you know, anything like that. And plus then you would have a condensed period of time where you would have so many different tournaments. People could play multiple different tours, and it's free. And it's fair because you know that these 6 months or 8 months or 9 months or whatever, there's tournaments. And then after that, you have an off season. You can give yourself time to travel. And maybe in that off season, creating some sort of team event that, like, it's kind of like an exhibition, like, you know, how they do with the, what is it called? The world team tennis. So you'd have like a world team tennis at the end of the year where you would have, like, you know, their best players, etc., and they would play exhibition matches just to keep people like playing and stuff like that. But you would have a condensed year. That's what I would definitely do.
I want to talk about you for a second. Are you still enjoying this? I mean, if you
ask me this once a day, once a day,
like talking to Noah about it, I know how unhappy he is half the time. Are you enjoying it?
It comes and goes. I think the one thing with tennis that I do enjoy is the freedom of we can make our own schedule. We can pick and choose when we want to do stuff and when we should do stuff. It's not like a job where you have to go turn up every single day, punch a card in, leave, and et cetera. So that's what I really enjoy about tennis. What I don't enjoy about tennis is the crap that comes along with it. Like, especially now, like being on the ITF players panel has been a nightmare just because it's added. I mean, we're doing this for free. Like, obviously I thought I could help make a change, and that's why I initially wanted to do it, because I think that I'm probably a lot more outspoken than 95% of the women's players. But players come to you at all hours of the day, messaging you like this, and this, which is great because they feel like they can speak to me. But how sad is it that it's taken players putting forward their time out of just basically, you know, the kindness of their heart for players to actually get answers. I feel like they had no answers before this. So Whereas one side of me is like, okay, I really want to try and make changes. I really want to try and help, etc. One side of me is like, why have I taken on this burden almost, you know? So it's yeah, the tennis side of it is the easiest part of it. Like, I think if you just had to play tennis, and I'm sure if you asked Noah the same thing, we would do it, love it, play it, do it, you know, it'd be easy. It's not just that anymore, unfortunately.
Well, you asked Mike, I always find a way to be difficult. So, yeah, I mean, this is, you know, this is an interesting thing, and you've been probably better than me about it, that you're still working kind of within the system. And I don't know if I told you this explicitly, I obviously spoken to Mike about this and in other interviews where I kind of call it a lost cause. I feel like there are so many moving parts and so many egos. Like, you know, nobody understands that, like, you know, we talk about the Grand Slams and ATP, like these are all different entities that somehow have their own power. And we saw it during the pandemic, like Roland Garros is like, we're going to September. See you guys. And not even a thought, not even a question. How do you still have this positivity where you're still fighting inside the system?
Because no, if I wasn't the one speaking out, who would? Which women player right now is speaking? Like, I don't think I'm special. I don't think that I've particularly done much in the sport of tennis. I don't think that I've reached, you know, like levels that a lot of these other girls have. I don't think the sport has given me much as it has given a lot of these other players, but at the same time, it's given me something. And what am I going to leave for the next generation? Like, this isn't even for me. I'm old. Like, I don't need to do this. I don't need to do this, you know, but how can I sit here and go, okay, yeah, let me just watch tennis go to pot. Like, it's going to go to crap. Like, it's just going to be so bad. And here you go, next generation, like, you're welcome. We did absolutely nothing, you know?
Yeah.
So if I wasn't speaking up, who would? And women's tennis is already, like, you know, not as popular as men's tennis. So I don't know.
I mean, you brought this up quickly, and this is one of the last things we'll say about this. You know, you have top players with, you know, family members that are lower ranked. Why not say something? You know, I know they have a lot on their plate. They're top in the world. You know, we can only imagine what it's like to be a top 10 player. And I get that. But at the same time, you know, this is their family. We have them on both sides, actually. Still, it doesn't seem like that's at the forefront of a lot of their decision-making.
I think I'm assuming you're talking about the whole, like, Naomi Osaka thing. And so the thing is that with Naomi, I completely understand she has a different fight right now. She's very active with her, on social media with, you know, the Black Lives Matter protest, which is obviously a huge part of what's happening right now. And I think that she's using her profile and platform to really bring great interest into this. And I think from a lot of their points of view, especially like the top players, they're in a different world. They don't need to sort of, tennis is not as big a problem as everything else right now. That's unfortunately how it is. You know, there's so many other things. There's COVID, there's, you know, Black Lives Matter, there's inequality everywhere. And I think that's what is happening right now. And maybe for tennis, it's taking a back burner right now. It's taking like the back step of it. But I think they're almost so focused on these big issues that tennis for them, because there's no problem for them right now in tennis, it's fine. So they're almost like, well, there's no problem for me, so I'm going to really focus on these big issues instead of focusing on tennis. That's the only way I can make it make sense in my head.
Well, I think I know that, you know, in corresponding with you last week, I think both of us agree just like the opportunity is what always has been, you know, for me, and Noah and I have talked about it. That's what's always made tennis so unique for me, that you have the opportunity always to take yourself to that next level. And I think it's just been, you know, that graphic last week was just so stark, and realizing that you just don't have the opportunity right now. And that part is, that hurts to see. So I guess I kind of wanted to focus at the end here on What is it that you're looking forward to over the next few months? You've got all this political stuff on the tennis side to worry about. And I know that I know I'm looking forward to seeing there are some challengers in the States here that are going to be coming up now. And I'm excited about that. What are the things you're looking forward to over the next few months?
And on a pop. Well,
yeah.
I think for me, like personally, like I'm just looking forward to being able to travel again. I think that's been such a dampener on everything. Like we're so used to just packing up our suitcases, pulling our passports out and flying somewhere across the world, you know, and that's not been possible the last 2 years. So I think that's what I'm looking forward to. And from a tennis side of point of view, I'm probably most looking forward to the change that has been promised by the ITF and the WTA. I don't know about the ATP, but they have said to us that things are supposed to get better. So I'm hoping, and I've got like every single extremity crossed, that it's going to change. But I think a lot of people will say that I've got blind hope. So
yeah, I don't want to attest to the change, but I will speak about the fact of how almost dependent I've become on our lifestyle. Like the anxiety of not traveling, like it's so funny. Like I'm packing for trips that don't really need a tennis racket and just don't even know how to pack. Like, it's just like, I'm like, what am I even doing right now? And I can only imagine what like a Nadal OCD looks like off the court, but like it makes me almost feel uncomfortable. And those are the funny things where like, oh, it'd be nice to travel again, which I would, you know, like even though I got so used to it, I didn't love necessarily taking trips every week, but got so accustomed to it, I don't even know how to function anymore.
I think you just kind of get sick of like seeing your four walls at home. You kind of really appreciate like what we had before. I think that's like the main thing. I think that's what most people, like players, are saying to me anyways.
Yeah, and he has to look at me every once in a while, and that's a terrible
and
thing.
You didn't get to see it, but he did have a blue mohawk that he grew out, fully dyed, covered.
So my daughter really
liked it, and that was the important part. So
you could see, you keep saying that, but it doesn't change the fact that you are a 40-year-old man with a mohawk.
That's true. Well, Tara, thank you so much. It's one of those things that I think really needs to be brought to light. And we're really happy to have you as that voice and joining us on the podcast. That really meant a lot. So thank you so much.
No, thank you for having me.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s inspired style and cutting edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The show might be over, but the conversation isn't. Join us on social media at NoahRubin33, at MikeCTennis, and at Behind the Racket.
Expect new episodes every Monday or Tuesday. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us expand and reach more listeners as we take you behind the racket.